Welcome back to the Grey Lodge. You're listening to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Wiseup. Today we're talking about Twin Peaks. Season 2, Episode 9, a.k.a. Episode 16. Are we on, is that what it is? 16? This one's called Arbitrary Law. Now, this one's another banger. You know, there's... how many episodes of Twin Peaks is there? If you count them all up, I think it's about 49 or 50. And there's only so many that are bangers. I would say there's probably 10 bangers. This is one of them. In last episode, season 2, episode 8, we just watched Cooper and Truman realize that Maddie, Laura's cousin, is also dead, also wrapped in plastic. Cooper must surely be reflecting on the statement that was made to him during the murder of Maddie. What's her full name? Pop quiz hot shot. I think it's Madeline. Maddie Ferguson. Madeline. Yes, Madeline. All right. Brunette Laura Palmer. Anyways, remember at the roadhouse, time froze. The giant came out, told Cooper, he said, "It is happening again," right? And then everyone sort of felt this sadness. They knew something happened. They weren't sure what, but now they know. All right. So, Cooper, Albert, Truman, and Hawk, they're all walking, you know, good shot at the beginning of the episode. They're all posse'd up, right? Posse's in effect, and they're doing the deuce. And Albert reveals that he actually retrieved the letter O from underneath Maddie's fingernail, as well as some fur, some white fur from a stuffed white fox in her other hand. Little clues, all right? So Cooper and the law enforcement crew here, they basically come to the conclusion that Cooper must go on whatever vision quest he must go on in order to stop these murders, now that we've got another one. And it seems that maybe Harry Truman's old-fashioned law enforcement gut feelings might have been wrong. So then James meets up with Donna at what looks to me like an old Pizza Hut. I don't know. they're not at the diner. Where are they? Where is this place, this strange place to eat that's not the Double R? And James proposes to Donna. He still has no idea Maddie's dead, neither does Donna. But, you know, James, he gets over Laura pretty quick, it seems. You know, I think it's been 2 weeks. Now he's proposing to Laura's best friend. So I can't imagine once he finds out that Maddie's dead, that's going to derail anything at all, right? We'll find out, though. We'll find out. Meanwhile, at the Double R, where James and Donna should have been eaten, Norma's mother is complaining about the eggs. Who cares, right? It doesn't matter. This is one of the most important scenes in all of Twin Peaks. Dare I say that? I'm going to play the clip for you, but what happens is Donna overhears Andy. He's just repeating that French phrase over and over that they read on Harold's suicide note, the French term for "I am a lonely soul." I'm not going to butcher it, but and then Donna, she hears him saying this, and she asks Andy about that phrase and asks if he knows Mrs. Tremond, because it was Mrs. Tremond. You remember the old lady with the grandson who had the cream corn in his hand? He was the one who said that phrase to Donna. So Donna hears this phrase and she's like, "What?" And the grandson was the one that told her to deliver the meals on wheels. Anyway, take a listen to the clip.
Chez un ami.
What did you say?
Nothing. Hello, Donna. Hello, James.
What did you say?
It's French.
I know it is. Tell me.
Donna, what's the big deal?
J'aime solitaire.
You know Mrs. Tremond?
Miss who?
Mrs. Tremond. Her grandson does the magic tricks. He told me this.
But it was Mr. Smith.
Harold?
He left a suicide note. Shaun, you know, it means I am a lonely soul.
I have to find Agent Cooper.
Donald, what's going on? Hey!
Shaun, I'm solitaire.
Mrs. Treeman's the one who told me about Harold Smith. She has a grandson, and he said this to me, the same words that are in Harold Smith's suicide note.
Well, maybe the boy said the same thing to Harold.
No, Harold's world was in his words. The suicide note has to be a message, and it all leads back here. She's pretty old. It might take a second if her grandson isn't here.
May I help you?
Is Mrs. Treeman home?
I'm Mrs. Treeman.
Well, it must have been your mother I spoke to.
My mother? She passed away 3 years ago. I live here alone, honey.
No, she was here. I spoke to her. And her grandson, he was here too.
But I have no children.
But he was here. They both were.
Donna, we better go.
Donna? Are you Donna Hayward?
Yeah.
Just a moment.
I've never seen her before in my life.
What'd you deliver meals here?
The morning after poor Harold died, I found this in my mail. I meant to turn it in. It's for you.
Thank you. It's Harold's handwriting.
Open it, Donna.
So after she overhears that, they go to... she goes to get Cooper. They all go to Mrs. Tremont's house. And Cooper suggests that the grandson could have been the one that told Harold Smith this phrase. But Donna definitively denies this. She says that Harold lived in his own world of words and his suicide note must be a message. And it all leads back to here. And that's why I say this could be one of the most important scenes in all of Twin Peaks. It's telling us there's a mystery to be had with the Treeman bloodline. But what does Harold Smith know about this? Why did he want to point to that family? I don't know. I don't know these answers. But we find out Mrs. Treeman isn't even there anymore. She died 3 years ago. What? Donna was just there like a couple days ago talking to her. What is she talking about? And then weirder yet, the woman who actually lives there now is also named Mrs. Treeman. And she is the daughter to the Mrs. Treeman that Donna met. And she says the night after Harold died, she got a letter in the mail addressed to Donna Hayward. She didn't know who that was, but here comes Donna at her front porch. And within it, it's a letter from Harold, and it has the missing pages from Laura's diary. And this Mrs. Treeman, she says... she's got no son, so there is no grandson. So who's the grandson? It's so bizarre. And I don't know, this is going to be one of those deals where we have to come back to this at the end of the entire series. Because I don't want to spoil anything, but I think that this tells us a very important clue as to what's going on in Twin Peaks. Don't ask me what it is, because I don't know what's going on in Twin Peaks. There's a couple theories, and I think this kind of lends itself to one of those theories. Moving on. They're reading through the entries, and the first entry is from February 22nd. That's the night before Laura dies. And Laura's entry, she is recollecting the dream in the Red Room, remember? Because she and Cooper had the same dream about being in the Red Room. And she whispers into Cooper's ear and says, somebody needs to stop Bob. And we also hear that Bob's only afraid of one man, Mike. Take a listen.
It's Laura's diary. Page from her diary.
Read it.
February 22nd. Last night I had the strangest dream. I was in a red room with a small man dressed in red and an old man sitting in a chair. I tried to talk to him. I wanted to tell him who Bob is because I thought he could help me. But my words came out slow and odd. It was frustrating trying to talk.
I got up and walked to the old man. Then I leaned over and whispered the secret in his ear. Somebody has to stop Bob. Bob's only afraid of one man. He told me once. A man named Mike. I wonder if this was Mike in my dream. Even if it was only a dream, I hope he heard me. No one in the real world would believe me. February 23rd. Tonight is the night that I die. I know I have to because it's the only way to keep Bob away from me. The only way to tear him out from inside. I know he wants me. I can feel his fire. But if I die, he can't hurt me anymore.
Laura and I had the same dream.
That's impossible.
Yes, it is. Deputy, take Donna home. Get the scene, Gerard.
And how creepy. On February 23rd, the night that Laura dies, that she's murdered, she says, "Tonight is the night that I die." She knew it was coming. And it's the only way that Bob can't hurt her anymore. And we also hear that Bob wants her fire, right? Because fire is a theme throughout this whole show. It's just another example of how it plays a role of maybe a primordial battle over the cosmic fire. Something like that. So Cooper, he's going on this vision quest journey, right? He's trying to get more information from Mike because Mike's got the paranormal mystic sort of skills here. And he's trying to get information from Mike now that Bob's killed once again. And he confirms that Laura had this supernatural shared dream because dream states are very important in the world of Twin Peaks. And when are we going to dig into that? I'm not sure. It might be at the very end when we unpack monstrously large theories. I'm not sure. I just know that if I go into it too deep now, it might give stuff away, which is the problem I had from the beginning of this whole Grey Lodge journey, because I know a lot of people out there haven't seen this show yet, and I don't want to ruin anything yet, so we're going to play this dance. But the ideas of dreams is something that if you read Kenneth Grant, he talks about the power of dreams and how you can do dream control to manifest realities from the subconscious. It's a way of a magician causing change into the real world. That's the short version. Anyway, so I know, very cryptic, Mr. Isaac. But we're going to hear Mike say that when he and Bob were killing, there was a perfect relationship. Appetite, satisfaction, and a golden circle. And he makes the hand of 666. I'll put the photo on the Instagram, you know, the okay hand. Otherwise called the Eye of the Illuminati sometimes, right? The golden circle, though, interesting. And Cooper says that the tall man took his ring, recalling season 2, episode 1. Remember when the tall man came? The giant? Why did I call it the tall man in my notes? The giant. That's his name. And he took the ring. That's the golden circle. All right. And there's a theme of circles throughout all of Twin Peaks. You know, the donuts, the fans, everything's circular. It's the karmic balanced wheel. We talked about this already. And Mike tells Cooper he's got all the clues he needs. And the answer is not in Cooper's head, but it's in his heart. He needs to go off of his intuition a bit. And you're going to hear Mike say something that implies that Cooper has a much higher purpose here in this world than just solving the murder of now three women. Theresa Banks, Laura Palmer, Maddie Palmer, the attempted murder of Ronette Pulaski. But anyways, he says so much responsibility. What is he saying there? That's a key phrase. What is he talking about? We're going to come back to that. And Cooper does eventually identify the answer is within him. He's just not sure how to find it. That's what he's going on the vision quest for. And then Cooper sees the old man, the butler, with the warm milkies. And he warns Cooper, the milk is getting warmer. Does that mean Cooper's getting on the right path? He's going, that game where hot and cold. Is he getting warmer? All this happens. I mean, this is, like I said, this episode's a banger. I'm going to play this clip for you, too, though, because it's very important. Take a listen.
His breathing is becoming more difficult. He needs that drug.
Mike, I need you to talk to me.
Any longer could kill him.
Mike. Bob is killed again. I need to know something. I need you to help me. Bob was in my dream. Laura Palmer was in my dream. So were you. And Laura dreamt about me the night before she died. The same dream that I had. I need to unlock that. I need the answer is inside of me.
Bob and I, when we were killing together, there was this perfect relationship. Appetite. Satisfaction. A golden circle.
A golden circle. A ring. My ring. I gave my ring to the giant.
He is known to us here.
Then he's real.
As real as I. He can help you find Bob.
How?
You must ask him first.
How do I do that?
You have all the clues you need. The answer is not here, my friend. The answer is here.
I don't understand.
So much responsibility.
So inside of Ben's office, Harry still thinks that Ben murdered Laura and Maddie. He's not really down for all the vision quest stuff. He's like, no, I got a good reason to believe Ben did it. Because they found the white fox hair on Maddie's hand. And that white fox, the stuffed white fox, is in Ben's office. So Harry also confirms that Ben called Laura the night of the murder. So Harry's like, dude, case solved. It's a wrap. That's the guy. He did it. Because Harry thinks that Ben killed Laura and Maddie both in the office. But then Albert comes through and tells Harry, like, hey, I got some more info for you. Turns out Maddie died the night before last, between 10 p.m. and midnight. And then he hands over the results of Ben Horn's blood test. But wasn't Ben Horn in the jail cell? Therefore, an alibi, he could not have murdered Maddie. Back at the sheriff's department, there are maintenance workers repairing a sprinkler system to get it up to code. And much of Twin Peaks, this kind of stuff, just they kind of gloss over it and you don't think nothing of it the first time through. It takes you about three viewings and then you start picking up on stuff, right? And this is one of those things. The maintenance workers are repairing the sprinkler system to get up to code and you hear them say, we're tweaking the sensors mostly because you don't want your sprinklers to be overly jumpy. All right? That kind of... I don't want to say it's important, but that plays a role here in a minute. Meanwhile, Andy and Lucy are talking about his sperms again. You know, not my favorite storyline. There's lots of... Season 2 has lots of storylines I'm not really into, and that's one of them. But it's necessary, right? We love all of Twin Peaks. You know, if they had a Season 4 and it was just Andy and Lucy talking about sperms for 20 hours, I'd watch it. You know? We love them all. Everyone's got a role. And that's kind of one of the main themes, I would argue, of Twin Peaks is everyone's got a role. We're all connected in this. So back to the jail cell. Ben's rotting away in jail. Mr. Tojimura shows up, which we already know is Catherine in disguise. And she shows up as Mr. Tojimura and tells Ben, hey, sign over the Ghostwood Estates and the sawmill. I've given you the check for $5 million. Let's go. But Ben admits there's a little bit of a snag. They got to hold off. Then Catherine reveals herself and does a little checkmate. If Ben signs off on the Ghostwood contract and the sawmill, she'll give Truman the alibi that Ben needs to get out of jail. The alibi that Ben was sleeping with Catherine the night of Laura's murder. An affair, if you will. Checkmate. Back to Donna. Donna stops by Leland, by the Palmer residence, to talk to Leland. Because she's like, she wants to give him a cassette of the song of her and Maddie and James. Remember the night they were all, I think it was in season one. Just you. I probably sang that better than James did. But, you know, that night they had that shared moment. And she wants him to mail it off to Maddie. Okay. But we can tell Leland is still possessed by Bob. And he's acting really strange. And we're watching and we're thinking, oh, he's about to kill Donna too. This guy's off the hook here. What's he doing? He gets triggered because Donna's wearing the same sunglasses that Laura used to have. And Donna asked Leland, she's like, hey, did you know about Laura's secret diary that she gave to the Herald? And he has no idea, but he's definitely uncomfortable. He's not cool with this because he knows something's in there, something bad about him. Leland pops a stick of gum in, making us recall how there's a gum that's coming back into style. Remember that phrase? He looks into the mirror, and sure enough, there's Bob. Yep, Bob's still in there, taking control of Leland's body. So Leland puts on a record and dances with Donna, goes full Biden, goes in for a sniff, too close, borderline sexual assaulting her, freaks her out, but then the doorbell rings, saved by the doorbell. Sheriff Truman is there to tell Leland, hey, there's been another murder. He doesn't tell Leland it's Maddie, because no one knows yet, right? And Leland, he's still trying to cover up, saying he took her to the bus stop, remember? So at this point, Donna leaves the Palmer house and somehow deducts and knows that Maddie's dead, because and Leland had something to do with it. A very sad scene in Twin Peaks. How does she know this, though? Well, it could be because Leland got a phone call while she was over there from a woman named Beth. I assume it's Maddie's mother, saying that Maddie never made it home. And that's when Truman pulls up to tell Leland they found another body. Donna apparently puts two and two together. She's got a bit of this all-knowing. But if you recall from the pilot, she also knew when Laura was dead. They called Laura's name a couple times. She wasn't in her chair. Her and James give each other a look. There's some connection to be had here with the residents of Twin Peaks. Take a listen.
Harry? Leland, we need your help.
What is it?
I'm afraid there's been another murder.
Oh, my God.
No, I can't tell you why or how, but we need your help, and we need it right away.
All right, anything, certainly. Let me get my coat.
Mr. Palmer get a phone call from her mother, and she said that she hadn't gotten home yet, and then they came over to talk to him, Sheriff Truman. And
we could have helped her.
How?
We could have helped her.
How?
I don't know. This is no good.
What do you mean? You mean us?
I gotta go.
James, it's not our fault. Don't leave.
Doesn't matter, don't you see? Nothing we do matters. Nothing's ever gonna change. Doesn't matter if we're happy and the rest of the world goes to hell.
James, don't leave! James, don't leave me!
Thank you.
Donna figures out that Maddie's dead. She tells James. James gets all mad. He's like, we could have helped her. She's like, how, James? And he's like, I don't know. I just know we could have. He gets mad after he just proposed to Donna, right? He gets mad, gets on his motorcycle, and he's leaving. He's like, I'm out of here. Now, at first glance, you think, what a jerk. But you can actually sympathize for James, kind of, in a way. Here's a guy whose first girlfriend was killed. Then he moves on rather quickly, I must admit, to his second romantic interest here. He went from Laura to Donna, her friend. Then Maddie shows up, and he's like, well, I'm in love with her now. Then Maddie. Now Maddie's dead, and he's going back to Donna. But he says nothing's ever going to change. And he says nothing that they do matters if the rest of the world goes to hell. He's feeling a bit apathetic. He's embracing a little bit of nihilism. And he's punching out of society. Very sad. It's actually a very sad scene. So then Cooper, Albert, Ben Horn, they're all in the roadhouse. It's emptied out because it's late at night. And Leland shows up to the roadhouse with Truman. Everyone's gathered to figure out who the killer is because Cooper's going full mystic. He's like, we're doing the Vision Quest thing. Big Ed shows up. I don't know, because he's the Bookhouse Boys, I guess. Hawk shows up with Leo and Bobby. All the guys of Twin Peaks are here. And I'm going to play the clip. Cooper explains how he's used all these other skills before, but now he's going to use magic. Yes, that kind of magic, I would argue. Ritual magic. And listen to Ben. Ben asks Cooper, he says, should we all do a Tibetan chant? Funny enough, maybe you should. Funny enough, because Ben Horn, or the guy, what's his name, Richard Beamer, the guy who plays Ben Horn, actually was into transcendental meditation, so not too far from the truth. But listen to how Cooper says he's going to use magic, right? All these things are connected to the realm of the occult because, of course, you know ritual magic is one of the key components of this. But then we're going to get a reappearance to one of our favorite characters, Major Briggs. He shows up. Clock shows it's 3 a.m, the inverted hour, right? Remember? The inverted hour of the devil. But he shows up to which Major Briggs isn't the devil, come on. But he shows up with the old butler guy, the room service guy that's warning everybody about their Milky's getting warm. Mr. Milky's flagged him down. He said, I need a ride to the roadhouse. At 3 a.m? What? Why? But he plays a role because he offers Cooper a stick of gum, right? And Leland even, Leland says he likes that gum. Since he was a kid, it's been his favorite gum in the world. And the room service guy says, that gum you like is going to come back in style. Circular, right? We got that circular loop here, the golden ring. And this triggers a full sequence for Cooper. And he finally pulls out what's inside of him, inside of his heart. For whatever reason, that unlocked the truth. And we all finally hear what Laura whispered into Cooper's ear in the dream. She says, I'm not going to say it. I'm going to let you hear it for yourself. Take a listen.
Gentlemen, 2 days ago, a young woman was found murdered by the same individual I believe responsible for the death of Laura Palmer. I have reason to believe that the killer is in this room. As a member of the Bureau, I spend most of my time seeking simple answers to difficult questions. In the pursuit of Laura's killer, I have employed Bureau guidelines, deductive technique, Tibetan method, instinct, and luck. But now I find myself in need of something new, which, for lack of a better word, we shall call magic.
Would you like us to hum? Tibetan chant, perhaps.
I think it's going terrifically well, don't you?
Now what?
Harry, I'm not completely sure. Someone is missing.
Excuse us.
Major Briggs, right on time.
I was on my way home. This kind gentleman flagged me down, asked if I could drive him here.
I know that gum. I used to chew it when I was a kid. That's my most favorite gum in the world.
That gum you like is going to come back in style.
My father killed me. Chilling. He finally remembers what was said to him in the dream. The giant gives Cooper his ring back. The scene pulls together a lot of pieces here. We got the gum. We got the old butler guy, what his role was. We got Laura's whispering. She's full of secrets. And she shared that secret with Cooper. So Cooper has everybody arrest Ben Horn, and he tells them he should take Leland to be his attorney, right? Because Leland is Ben's attorney, so nothing too shocking there. They get to the sheriff's department. Cooper now whispers into Truman's ear. This is another circular sort of thing, right? Laura whispered the name of the killer into Cooper's ear. Now Cooper's whispering the name of the killer into Truman's ear. And they trick Leland into going into the interrogation room, and they watch as he proceeds to freak out. And the problem is, Cooper says Leland's the killer because Laura whispered this to me in a dream. And Truman's like, bro, we need more evidence than that. Come on, man. But they cuff him up, and Leland is possessed by Bob, and Bob shows his true self while he's in the prison cell here. And he admits to everything through Bob's voice. Bob flat out tells us he took over Leland's body as a vehicle. Now, was any of this related to the gum? Did that unlock something? Leland said it was his favorite gum when he was a boy, which is when he came across the spirit of Bob at the Finger Lakes or Pearl Lakes or whatever it was called. And really creepy stuff happens in this scene. I'm going to play you the clip so you can hear all the dialogue, but Bob talks about leaving Leland's body, and he's going to pull the ripcord out so they can watch him die, which is a very creepy metaphor. Like, he's going to take his soul with him when he leaves. And he also tells Cooper about something that happened in Pittsburgh, which we're going to hear more about that later on in the season. So take a listen.
Fuck, take Ben upstairs and release him.
Leland?
That's not Leland.
How did you know?
Laura told me. In her dream.
We're gonna need a lot stronger evidence than this.
How about a confession, Harry?
You have the right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you.
You want to ask him some questions, huh?
Did you kill Laura Palmer?
That's a yes.
How about Madeline Ferguson?
What do you think?
I'm asking you.
Well, what do you think?
That's the question.
Oh, guys, GG, Wiz. I guess I kinda sorta did. I have this thing for knives.
Just like what happened to you in Pittsburgh that time. Huh, Cooper?
Oh, Leland. Leland. You've been a good vehicle, and I've enjoyed the ride. But now he's weak and full of holes. It's almost nearly time to shuffle off to Buffalo.
Does Leland know what you've done?
Leland's a babe in the woods with a large hole where his conscience used to be. And when I go, children, I will pull that ripcord. And you watch, Leland, remember. Watch him. But not for long.
Wild scene, though, right? Very important scene. Dick Tremaine and Andy, they go into a room where Lucy says she's going to get a blood test to see who's the father. And normally this is the kind of scene I would gloss over and be like, bro, I've had enough of Andy Sperm's talk. But Dick Tremaine asks Andy, he says, got a light? Now this will be very significant in season 3. It's a whole ordeal in season 3, I'll tell you that. And basically there's a part where a guy says, got a light? In season 3 as well. Except they spell it differently. They spell it G-O-T-T-A. Got a light. But stranger yet, after Dick asks Andy if he's got a light, he lights up a cigarette with the lighter that he had the whole time. He didn't even need a light. He's got one. Why did he say it?
Okay, here's how this is going to work. I'm going to keep my baby.
Oh.
That's not open for discussion.
I see.
Be quiet. Let her talk.
Got a light?
No.
You were saying?
But the point being, this starts a process. Because smoke from the cigarette, we see it wafting up into the sprinklers. Remember, the maintenance guys are working on the sprinklers. So back to Cooper. Cooper explains how the dreams are linking all of these things together. He was like, yeah, so we had the little man who danced in the red room, and Leland, he was dancing compulsively all over the place, remember? Bob had gray hair. Well, Leland's hair went gray when he killed Jacques. Mike said that people Bob inhabited were his children, and Leland said his neighbor at Pearl Lakes was named Robertson, son of Robert, son of Bob. We also hear that the letters underneath all the fingernails were R-O-B-T, which was going to spell out Robertson, and he calls it a signature on a demon self-portrait. I mean, there's not much mystery left behind, is there? Well, there's a lot, actually, but a lot of people didn't like that they spelled everything out the way they did. From what I read, Bob Iger, who was running... What channel was this show on? CBS? ABC? I don't know. Wanted them to spell it out, and apparently, I don't think Lynch wanted to, but they proceeded to do it. You can get into... Like I said, this whole Grey Lodge series, we're scratching the surface. You can go so deep into the world of Twin Peaks, but I gotta keep it moving because, like I said, we've got 50 episodes to get through here, folks. And the books and the theories. I mean, there's a million things to unpack. I don't have time to dig into, you know, the behind the scenes on every little bit. But if you really love Twin Peaks, you can... I'm telling you, there's so much out there. It's wild. We hear that Laura was writing about Bob in her diary. And when she saw those pages ripped out, she knew that Bob was onto her. Because Bob must have ripped those out. We also hear that Leland made the call to Laura from Ben's office. We also hear that he was the third man outside Jock's window. And meanwhile, Leland Bob there, he's down in the jail cell chanting about, you know, that the magician longs to see fire walk with me stuff. And how he'll catch you with his death bag and he's going to kill again. And at this point, the sprinklers kick on. and Leland Bob is screaming in agony, smashing his head against the jail door. Take a listen.
Van Horn's blood test, he's the wrong type. Harry, the answer was right in front of me from the very beginning. What did the little man do in my dream?
He danced.
After Laura's death, Leland danced compulsively. We were told that Bob the killer was a gray-haired man. When Leland killed Jacques, his hair turned gray overnight. Leland said when he was a child, the gray-haired man who lived next door was named Robertson. Mike said the people Bob inhabited were his children. Robertson, son of Robert. The letters under the fingernails, R-O-B-T, Bob was spelling his name. A signature on a demon self-portrait.
Why would he kill her?
Laura was writing about Bob in her diary. Leland found it, ripped out the pages. She knew he was onto her. It was Leland who placed that call from Ben Horn's office to Laura the night she died. He was the third man outside Jacques' cabin window. He took the girls to the train car. It was his blood we found, not Ben Horn's.
Then why kill Maddie?
Maybe she reminded him of Laura. Maddie was going home. Perhaps he couldn't bear to part with her. He wanted to relive the experience, or maybe she realized Bob was a killer and he found out.
Now this Bob can't really exist. I mean, Leland is just crazy, right?
Through the dark of futures past, the magician longs to see. One chance out between two worlds.
Fire!
Walk with me! I'll cut you with my death bag! You may think I've gone insane, but I promise I will kill again!
Let's think about what happened here. The maintenance guys are working on the sprinkler system, tweaking the sensors mostly so that it wasn't too sensitive. Then Dick Tremaine asks Andy for a light, even though he has one, lights his cigarette, starts smoking, which apparently sets off the sprinklers, like they were set to be too sensitive now. And the sprinklers activate some kind of cleansing mechanism to purge Bob from Leland, forcing an exorcism of Bob. The water is apparently the counter to the fire, and Bob wasn't sticking around for that, so he pulls the ripcord and kills Leland on the way out the door. Because Cooper and Truman, they struggle to get the door open. Appears to be too late because Leland's head is all smashed up, and he appears to be Leland once again, and he admits to killing his daughter, and he's horrified by that realization. Of course you would be. You killed your own daughter, possessed by an evil spirit. And another tragic scene. Leland's begging for Laura's forgiveness and talks about how Bob took over his body, sexually assaulting him, possessing his body. And he says that he saw Bob in a dream and he let Bob into play. He says, he made me do things, terrible things. And he said they wanted to use lives like Laura. He says they wanted her. They wanted Laura, but she was strong and wouldn't let them in. And it's the fact that she refused to let them in that made them, like Bob, kill Laura. And you hear him use the plural pronoun of they. We're talking about multiple entities. It's not just Bob. So Leland is saying there's a league of evil spirits who want to feed off of the fear and the pain and the suffering. That's the Garmin Bogia, the creamed corn. And Bob is part of it, and he made Leland kill Laura for not allowing them in. Now, a lot of people would rightfully so point to this scene, and it's an allegory or metaphor for incest. That's definitely here, right? But I think to just simplify it all and say, oh, it's just a a story about incest is so far. I mean, it's a part of it. Sure, I'll give you that. But the whole storyline of Twin Peaks is about supernatural entities and demons. Take a listen to the whole thing.
I killed her. Oh my God. I killed my daughter. I didn't know. Forgive me. Forgive me. Oh God. I was just a boy. I saw him in my dream. He said he wanted to play. He opened me, and I invited him, and he came inside me.
He went inside?
When he was inside, I didn't know. And when he was gone, I couldn't remember. He made me do things. Terrible things. He said he wanted lives. He wanted others. Others that they could use. Like they used me.
Like Laura.
They wanted her. They wanted Laura. But she was strong. She fought him. She wouldn't let him in. Oh, God. They had me kill that girl, Teresa. And they said if I didn't give them Laura, they'd have me kill her too.
But she wouldn't let them in.
He said she'd die before she'd let them. And they made me kill her. Oh God, have mercy on me. What have I done? What have I done? Oh, God. I love her. I love her with all my heart. My angel, forgive me.
Leland. Leland, the time has come for you to seek the path. Your soul has set you face to face with the clear light, and you are now about to experience it in its reality, wherein all things are like the void and cloudless sky, and the naked, spotless intellect is like a transparent vacuum, without circumference or center. Leland, in this moment, know yourself and abide in that state. Look to the light, Leland. Find the light.
I see it.
Into the light, Leland. Into the light.
I see her. She's there.
Into the light, Leland.
She's beautiful.
Into the light.
Laura.
Don't be afraid.
Very tragic scene. And Leland dies in Cooper's arms as he guides him to the light. And he sees Laura as he passes on. The sprinklers stop almost on cue. And, you know, Leland's dead now. But he had the realization and he begged for forgiveness from Laura. And, you know, I guess he got it. So, wow. The whole thing's coming to a close, it seems, right? And we got Cooper walking in the woods and they see Major Briggs, who symbolically you'll see him positioned. He's on the path, meaning Cooper's on the right path. But Cooper's journey isn't over yet. He's got more to go. And we're going to hear Albert talk about how people actually saw Bob. But he's like, well, is it a real person or is it a spirit? How did people see Bob? And Major Briggs, who's very tapped into all this stuff, says there's more to heaven and earth than what lives in our philosophy, meaning there's a lot more going on than we know. And the guys decide that they to sort of try to digest this, they say, well, Bob is just the name for the evil that men do. And they ask, where did Bob go? He left Leland's body. Where did he go? And then you're going to see Bob traveling as an owl in the woods because the owls are not what they seem. Take a listen.
He was completely insane.
Think so?
But people saw Bob. People saw him in visions. Laura, Maddie, Sarah Palmer.
Gentlemen, there's more in heaven and earth than is dreamt of in our philosophy.
Amen.
Well, I've lived in these old woods most of my life. Seen some strange things, but this is way off the map. I'm having a hard time believing.
Harry, is it easier to believe a man would rape and murder his own daughter? Any more comforting?
No.
An evil that great in this beautiful world. Finally, does it matter what the cause?
Yes, because it's our job to stop it.
Yeah. Maybe that's all Bob is. The evil that men do. Maybe it doesn't matter what we call it.
Maybe not. But if he was real, if he was here, and we had him trapped, and he got away. Where's Bob now?
So apparently Bob is back into owl form, and the owls are not what they seem. Indeed, they're evil spirits. And that feels like a natural end to season two, doesn't it? It's not. It's not. It goes on. We got another, I think, 13 episodes. You think, how could they possibly go 13 more episodes? They already told us everything that happened. Well, there's a lot more to unpack, if you could believe it. A lot of people dislike the rest of season two. You're probably going to want to tap out at certain points. But I'm telling you, there's golden nuggets throughout all of season two. And we're going to unpack it. We're going to learn about the Black Lodge, the White Lodge, what Major Briggs is doing out there. It's going to get wild, though. But I'm telling you, you're going to have a lot of ups and downs here. But you got to stick through, because the season finale, the last couple episodes of season two are awesome. So stick with it, okay? We're moving along. But that was one of the biggest episodes in all Twin Peaks there. So I hope you enjoyed that. So for next time, watch season two, episode 10. And meet me back here in the Grey Lodge. Thanks for your support. Stay woke. Thank you.